Ruth Barton is one of our regular film reviewers on Arena, but by day, her obsession is also with film, as she is Associate Professor of Irish Film Studies at Trinity College. She's just published a new book on Irish film called Irish Cinema in the 21st Century, and she joins me now to talk about it. Ruth, you've been exploring what is or can be called an Irish film, and you pick what director of The Guard and Calvary, John Michael McDonagh, said around the time of Calvary, that was 2014. He said he was no great fan of Irish film. He didn't think he was very technically accomplished. He didn't feel Irish film was very intelligent. He also was afraid that people would think that his new film was one of those terrible Irish films he had seen in the past. I mean, what he said outraged people. Was there even a germ of truth in what he was saying?
Well, it was certainly provocative, and it got all of us scurrying back to our books to think, "Oh, did I get it wrong over these many years?" First of all, I'm not certain how much he meant it, but I think that overall, not true. I love Irish cinema. I think there are many great Irish films, and actually, I love Calvary, although I know it has divided people. However, the germ of truth that does lie in it is getting Irish people to see Irish films, and there is, I think, still. There are a lot of Irish films that are made that Irish people never see. Now, that happens in all industries, but it seems to be a shame when we have a fundamentally a very small industry that quite a lot of films are appearing that if you mentioned them to the passerby in the street, they would never have heard of. So we're very, very focused on the high end, if you like, releases. And sometimes a very small film will slip through that everybody, like Pilgrim Hill, for instance, made for nothing, that really caught on with the public, or The Lonely Battle of Thomas Reed, another film that really caught on. But overall, I think there is a slight feeling, people, when they go out for a night out, they want to see a big budget Hollywood high entertainment film, and that's not what we make.
Yes, because your book is full of passionate people with no money who are going out making films like Pilgrim Hill and others that and hoping with a wish and a prayer that they're going to get it screened either in a cinema or on a television channel.
I love this, and I love the fact, and when I was writing the book, I read many, many interviews with Irish filmmakers, and they all have something to say. And now you have to think, okay, some of our best-known filmmakers, say Lenny Abrahamson, now he doesn't make Irish films at the moment. He's not making Irish films. Room is or is not an Irish film, and we could start, the relentless categorising. But let's say he's not making films set in Ireland, just to make it... So good for him, because he's out in the world and he's a great ambassador for our film culture, and he's making award-winning films. So Irish filmmakers don't have to make Irish films. But then there's a whole raft of Irish filmmakers, and even people working in very surprising genres like the horror film, who really want to use that genre to say something about what it means to be Irish today.
Yes, this is the very interesting things, because you say, the landscape has changed an awful lot. Now there's the horror genre, animation, of course, has got award-winning films have been made in that area. Documentary filmmaking is flourishing. Why this opening up of the genres and the types of film people are making?
One thing that is certain is simply because of digital filmmaking. So it's now just so much easier to make a film. Now, it isn't so easy to make a good film, but anybody can make a film now. All you need is basically a phone and a computer to edit. So that has, opened up the market to people who would otherwise have been restricted. And particularly to that very low budget kind of category, which is both the documentary and the horror film.
So digging into some of the new genres now you explore in the book, horror is a pretty new kid on the block, I would think. And I mean, we know Irish Gothic, and I guess that has gone back in films a long way. But now the subject matter is changing. Irish horror is evolving in terms of the subject matter it deals with.
Yeah, I think you could see a number of different trends in contemporary Irish horror. One is eco-horror, and that really probably dates back to maybe foot and mouth disease. There were a number of foot and mouth disease horror films, but these are films that are very, very aware of the incursions of technology on the landscape and on reproduction, and are exploring that to great effect. And then There are a lot of films that are coming out that are exploring the legacy of Catholicism and the kind of horrors of institutional abuse, and others too.
Let's go back to what you call the eco theme. So isolation is one of those. So we have a clip of that, but you might set it up as to what's happening. Something's going wrong in Jamie's farm.
Yes, in hock to the bank. He needs to make some money to save his farm. And so he allows a scientist to experiment on his cattle. And so the cow is pregnant, but instead of delivering the predictable calf, it actually delivers the predictable monster.
So that is the story of the film, but there are themes and rather uncomfortable things that we'll talk about just after this clip. It's from Isolation. Here, Garda Harrigan, played by Stanley Townsend, visits Jamie. He's played by John Lynch. That's Jamie's farm, where he's talking to Mary, one of the traveller's girlfriends, played by Ruth Negga.
Is that your van on the verge?
It is.
No word, Dan, if you please. It's giving you trouble, yeah?
Oh, no, Tom.
All right, Dan, but you be careful now, you hear me?
That's all right, Tom. I said they could stay a night or two.
It's your funeral, Dan, you know how it goes.
What is there to steal around here, Tom?
It's a hard time, all right. I hear that new fella at the bank's taking you all the way. He's a right fecker by all accounts.
Aye, he is.
Can't be messing around with these boys, Dan. They mean business. They have you out, quick as you like. They'll be round with a sheaf of court orders to bar you from your own land.
Was there something in particular, Tom?
All right, Dan. It's just a bit of advice, that's all.
Stanley Townsend, John Lynch and Ruth Negga there from Isolation. Now, you talked about Boy Eats Girl and Isolation as two films in the horror genre who have a mixed race actress, Samantha Mumba in Boy Eats Girl and then Ruth Negga in Isolation. And you say that sits uncomfortably in the narrative.
It's a strange thing, because Ruth Negga, to take the Isolation, the film that we've just heard a clip from, she plays a traveller girl in it. And that, if you think, you know, hold that up to reality, it's slightly surprising to have a mixed-race traveller. But what's strange about that film and about Boy Eats Girl is that the films never make any reference at all to that these two women are very... They don't look like conventional, traditional Irish film stars. But so they decide to take a kind of colourblind approach to them. So they put two very visibly other women, which would have opened up for some really, really interesting explorations of new Irish identities. And then they pretend they haven't done it. And so, I mean, Ruth Negga, who's fabulous in this, and this is well before she had the kind of global fame, plays this traveller girl who then becomes, you know, impregnated by the monster. And she's living in a caravan on the farm, and she's hiding away from the traveller family who's seeking retribution because her boyfriend is from the settled community.
So by not making it clear why it's important that this person is mixed race, it makes it even more dangerous, almost, the implications of casting the person.
I think so, because she becomes a kind of monstrous other in the film, and then you know, you're saying, okay, why does the mixed race woman have to be the monstrous other and the bearer of, you know, the next generation of monster? And I'm uneasy with that in the film, and I wish they'd just confronted, you know, why they had cast Ruth Negga, because you can't ignore the fact that she, you know, represents a new kind of Irishness, which is fabulous. Now, you know, I'd love to see more of that in Irish cinema and better representation of those new identities in Irish society.
Within the horror genre as well, when we saw that, you talked about eco, but we're very much looking back at the guard calling to the farm, and it's very old-fashioned in the notion of Ireland. But you also say that the horror genre moves into kind of global themes in the horror genre, and you give The Canal as an example of that.
Yeah, The Canal is an interesting film because if anybody's seen it and it's available on Netflix, you can see it. It both is set in Dublin and is not set in Dublin. And once you start watching it and trying to locate the various buildings and the kind of topography of Dublin, you begin to run up against a problem, because actually much of the film was not shot in Dublin. So it's Dublin and not Dublin. And then you have the guards in the story, which appears to be set in Ireland, wearing uniforms that say police, not guards. And in the beginning, you might think, oh, well, this is a mistake. But I think it's not. I think it again harks back to that Calvary statement of not wanting the film to look too Irish, because I think the thinking, you know, behind this may have been, if it doesn't look too Irish, then it's not too provincial, then it'll reach out to a global audience. And visually, the film is very much constructed to look like the Japanese, the kind of classic Japanese horror film, with the woman with the long black hair rising out of the water. So here's a case of an Irish film that really does not want to be called an Irish film, for fear, I think, of being pigeonholed.
So going back to Calvary, when you look at it then, it is an Irish film.
Of course it's an Irish film.
It's got an Irish priest.
It's got a Gleeson in it. Of course it's an Irish film. It's got Brendan Gleeson and Donald Gleeson in it, which makes it doubly Irish. But of course it's an Irish film. It's set in one of the most recognisable Irish landscapes, which is Yeats country. It's set in Sligo. It's got Brendan Gleeson in it, who is an Irish priest. Now he's been made, you know, he's slightly different because he's come late to the priesthood, so he has a family, has a daughter. But it's all about the community turning against the priest, and their antipathy towards the priest is justified because of the many years of clerical abuse. And it's both visually and thematically completely recognisable as an Irish film.
But what he's doing different is...
What he's doing different is, in a way, he's... What I find interesting about Calvary, what I like about it, he's the good priest. So instead of punishing the priest, as you get, for instance, if you go back to the Magdalene sisters, where the priest is an object of hate and is laughed at, here we have some attempt to retrieve the figure of the priest for kind of positive reading. I'm interested in that because it seems to be like the wheel has almost turned, where there's some kind of desire to reinstate some kind of authority, some kind of moral authority in a world where, once you evacuate the church, what's left? Because faith in politics, faith in politicians, all those faith in banking and so on, we lost all of those gradually, as people did globally. And I think there is a kind of searching for something to replace it.
Another theme is around the whole idea of Irish identity is gender and breaking down gender stereotypes. We saw that in Neil Jordan's Breakfast on Pluto, but also A Date for Mad Mary. Tell me what it does to do that.
I love that film. And again, it's a very small release, and it came out almost, you know, without much fanfare. So A Date for Mad Mary, the central character, Mary Innitt, played by Shona Kerslake, has just been released from prison. She was put in because she attacked another young woman, and she's come out. She's preparing her speech for her best friend who's getting married, and that structures the film. But then it turns out, really, that what she's looking for is a queer relationship. And then you begin to wonder, is she also slightly disappointed that her best friend is getting married? Is that a kind of subtext to the film? I like this film very much. It's also not set in Dublin, which is nice.
Yes,
it has very different kinds of characters.
Let's listen to a clip from A Date for Mad Mary with Shona Kerslake, where she has a little monologue with herself.
Me and Char have known our fair share of hard times. When Char's gran died, I was there for her. When stuff was going on for me, she was always there for me too. As they say, hard times will always reveal true friendship. And ours is very true. Ours is the most true. Ours is...
Hi, this is Charlene. Leave a message.
Hey, it's me. So I was reading this really interesting thing in the paper earlier. It said that the best night ever to go out with Mary is a Tuesday night. So, call me back.
I just love her whole demeanour in that.
Yeah, she's wonderful, yeah.
You say your biggest regret in the book, you say, is around gender and the few opportunities there are for women filmmakers.
I think that they're so unrepresented still in Irish filmmaking. And even those women filmmakers who are making films, they are working on no budgets, and they're not getting the opportunities that the guys are getting to make big budget, splashy headline movies that are sort of kind of pigeonholed as small relationship filmmakers. And I'd love to see that change.
Yes, and a few of the examples you said of people getting things wrong are also that too much of the male gaze, maybe.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm actually kind of sick of Dublin gangster films, to be honest, and I'd love to see films made about, you know, women, foregrounding women in Dublin spaces rather than the endless gangster films.
Ruth Barton has been speaking about her book Irish Cinema in the 21st Century, and it's published by Manchester University Press.